read an article, I believe it was Yahoo Finance or somewhere on the internet, that one of our producers had laid in here, quoting an author named Tom Corley from his book Rich Habits. And the article said 79% of lower income people, when surveyed, admit to gossiping at work. 6% of the wealthy do so. Posted that on Twitter and stirred up a bit of a problem, because apparently people are bitter about the fact that their personal habits are indicative of to whether or not they're going to be able to build wealth. And I do like stirring up trouble with shallow, silly people on Twitter. But it's, you know, and then they try to get sophisticated and take the high road. And, you know, I'll go there in a few minutes. But I just told James Childs, our producer, Blake Thompson, our executive producer, I said, find Tom and let's get him on the air, because this research he's done is fascinating for this book. Now, I've not read the book yet, admittedly. It's been 2 days, and but I'm going to go ahead and recommend that you pick it up and you read it and you learn it, because I will tell you, I've read through what the conclusions of the book are and the thesis of the book, and I'm in complete agreement with that. And we did find Tom. He's in New Jersey, and he agreed to come on with us and talk about his discoveries as he was putting together the book Rich Habits. Tom, welcome to the Dave Ramsey Show.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, it's an honor to have you with us. For those of you that don't know, Tom's a certified public accountant, and he's president of Serafis. Did I pronounce that correctly?
That's right, Serafis & Company.
Which is the largest CPA firm in Rahway, New Jersey, and he works with clients helping them become wealthy. He studied this idea that habits create wealth. The daily success habits of wealthy individuals is the subtitle to the book Rich Habits, which you can get at richhabits.net, by the way, and he's giving our listeners today a 20% discount. Again, Tom, thanks for joining us. So you have observed what I guess all of us in the business have kind of noticed, that habits create wealth.
Yeah, Dave, and I'll be honest with you, I stumbled into it because one of my clients was a small business client. They failed financially. Their bank had termed their line of credit. They lost their line, couldn't make payroll, and he came into my office one night, and this was a big, burly guy, and he started sobbing, and he asked me, what am I doing wrong? What are wealthy people doing that I'm not doing? And, you know, I'm a CPA, Dave, I've got 25 years, I'm a financial planner, and I couldn't answer the question because I didn't know. I didn't know because I didn't know what the habits and the daily activities were of wealthy people, and so I spent 5 years trying to unearth that.
And you did a series of surveys, I assume, for the book?
Yeah, over a five-year period, I interviewed 233 wealthy people and 128 poor people, and I had some broad questions that 20 broad questions that I asked, covering essentially their entire day from the minute that they woke up in the morning to the minute that they put their head on the pillow. I wanted to know what they did during the day, every part of the day, and then it took about a year to analyze the data.
Yeah, the first one on the list, 70% of wealthy people eat less than 300 junk food calories a day. 97% of poor people eat more than 300 junk calories a day. Number two, 23% of the wealthy gamble, and 52% of poor people gamble. So you found all these interesting correlations between really what are self-destructive habits versus self-fulfilling or building habits. And what do you make of all of that?
Well, the thing is, what I found out is that 40% of all of our daily activities are habits.
Mm-hmm.
That was in a book called The Habit Loop, and there's also some research behind that. So 40% of the time, Dave, we're on autopilot, and if you have good daily success habits or rich habits, more rich habits than poverty habits, you're going to be successful. If you have more poverty habits than rich habits, you're going to be poor.
Yeah.
It's really not that complicated.
Yeah. Well, one of the people, of course, people, when I said 79% of poor people gossip at work, 6% of the wealthy do, One of the things we have is that we have a no-gossip policy. I wrote that in one of our leadership books. We'll fire you for gossiping here. I don't put up with that crap because I don't want that garbage in my office. And there's 400 people here who love that policy. But I always run into this weird response, like people defending gossips. And they were like, well, Dave, you know, that doesn't mean that maybe the rich people lied in the survey. And then they said, well, one lady was like, you know, Dave, correlation does not mean causation. In other words, gossiping doesn't mean that makes you poor. And I'm like, well, lady, you pretty much missed the whole freaking point. It was not a direct correlation causation discussion. It was, if you live your life without character, you are less likely to become wealthy. It's a little deeper than just a direct connection, isn't it?
It is, and it's not an accident. It's intentional. Wealthy people, the answer to the why they don't gossip is, to wealthy people, relationships are like gold, Dave. It's the currency of the wealthy. They use these relationships to open up doors for opportunities for themselves, for their kids, for their family. You know, when their kids graduate college, they've got a Rolodex of individuals who are important that they can call up. And so 88% of the wealthy, they believe, in my study, they believe relationships are critical to financial success versus 17%.
And by the way, that's real relationships. That's not a manipulative thing. I'm trying to build a Rolodex here so I can get rich. It's, I really actually care about that other person.
Yeah, and I actually accumulated 35 data points that wealthy people told me that they try and gather on their contacts. They're important things about their lives, their kids' lives, what schools they went to. It goes on and on the list, but I thought it was very interesting how much information that wealthy try and gather on their contacts, and they do it through a hello call, happy birthday call, and these life event calls that I strategies that I unearthed.
Interesting. 86% of the wealthy love to read versus 26% for the poor. That one seems obvious.
Yes, and this is coming really from the parents. The parents in wealthier households or success-minded households, they teach their kids these rich habits. In the poor households, they don't, because they don't know what the rich habits are. They never learned it from their parents, so you can't blame the parents. I'm not trying to be critical of the poor people. That's, in fact, why I wrote Rich Habits. I wanted to bridge that gap between the wealthy households that are having this conversation about the habits and the poor household who are not.
Yeah, but the cynical person always says, yeah, but if you're born into money, you're just born into money. And most people are born into money that are rich, and that's how the rich people got rich, was they were born into it. It's inherited money. The stats really don't back that cynical statement up, do they?
No, they don't. In fact, in my data, 18% of the wealthy had inherited money. And that means that most of them are not inheriting money. And in the financial planning community, we always throw around this statistic that 85% of the wealth is created in one generation, comes and goes. So you really don't have a lot of wealth being transferred. There isn't a class system in this country in the sense that there's a transfer of wealth from one generation to the next. There is in that 0.1%, no question, but not in the majority, the 85%. Of the population.
Right. Tom Stanley's old book, The Millionaire Next Door, his research, and he had a huge sample size on that, was that 88% of America's millionaires were first-generation rich. And so your stats pretty well back that up.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think the big differentiator is what happens in the household, or what habits the parents pass along to their kids. You know, you might pick up, I know I did in my 40s and 50s, some really good habits, especially from this research. My kids are all the beneficiaries of this research, and my son's knocking it out of the park right now at work. He's doing great. It's because I've been preaching this, and I got to tell you, Dave, they're sick of hearing it, my kids. But that's what you have to do as a parent.
Yeah, you drill it in. Hey, I would love to talk about this for a few more minutes. Can you spare one more segment of time?
Absolutely.
All right. Our guest is Tom Corley. He's the author of the book Rich Habits, The Daily Success Habits of Wealthy Individuals. I want to cover a few more of these. We're going to try to post these, if his publisher allows us to post these things on the website. We're going to try to post these 21 things, and I'll read a few more of them when we come back. If this doesn't interest you, you're not interested in becoming wealthy. It's a cause and effect issue. Have you noticed the price of gold lately? It took a dip, but now it's back up, and that means that right now is the time to sell your gold before the price goes back down. Talking with Tom Corley this hour, CFP, CPA, author of the book Rich Habits, and absolutely incredible book. You need to jump out and get it as fast as you can. You can get it at our website, or no, you can get it at his website, richhabits.net, at a discount right now. Obviously, it's available where all fine books are sold. So we're talking about this idea that habits are indicative of your likelihood of being wealthy. In other words, if you found somebody that has studied and said, all right, here are 21 things that people who have been married 30 years or more and are happy do. If you wanted to be married 30 years or more and you were wanted to be happy, you would do those 21 things. This is really not freaking rocket science, people. It's not. And yet everybody tries to make this difficult as if it's some kind of class warfare thing, or you're born with the money gene or you're not. It's your behavior. That's what does this. 80% of wealthy people are focused on accomplishing some single goal. Only 12% of the poor do this. 76% of the wealthy exercise aerobically 4 days a week. 23% of the poor do this. 63% of the wealthy listen to audiobooks during their commute to work. 5% of the poor do that. 81% of the wealthy maintain a to-do list. 19% of the poor do that. Interesting stuff, Tom. I love this research.
Well, I have to tell you, it was a lot of work, and when I was done and I finished my analysis of it, I really was intending on just doing a training program for my clients, but the differences between the habits between the two groups was like the Grand Canyon, Dave. And I had a couple of these seminars that I conducted. And one of the individuals in the seminar, an insurance guy, I taught him the difference between a goal and a wish. And I'll tell you, it was interesting because he was trying to hit $100,000 in life insurance commissions. He for 4 years, he failed. So I told him, well, you know, that's because you're making a wish. And I showed him how to set up, how wealthy people create their goals. And instead of $100,000 in commissions, his goal was making 10 telemarketing phone calls a day. And Dave, in 6 months, he called me and he told me I blew past $100,000. And then that later that year, he stopped making the calls because he was already above $200,000. He had enough business in his pipeline for the next year.
Wow, it's amazing. Goal setting is, I mean, that's a basic thing. You know, I grew up in a middle class household. Mom and dad very entrepreneurial, but they got plugged in back in the 60s and 70s into the Zig Ziglar type of teaching. And they taught we were not allowed to do anything. We were not allowed to just feed our brains with television only. We were required to read, and we always had to do written goals. And those two things have probably revolutionized my life. It's amazing. Very cool stuff. Good, good, good. Now, let's go back to that idea of correlation and causation for a second. You're not saying, nor am I, that aerobic exercise 4 days a week creates wealth.
No, but what I learned from my research, which I never expected at all, was that the reasons why wealthy people engage in healthy activities...
That's it.
One individual, for an example, this is a great example. He was 76 years old. He made about $1.5 million a year. And I said to him, why don't you retire? You know, you have $17 million. Why don't you retire and just enjoy your life? And he looked at me like I was from Mars, and he said, you know, for the last 45 years, I've been eating right, exercising every day. He had a treadmill. He already jogged. And he said, I've been doing this so that I knew the last years of my career were going to be the highest income years. And I felt if I could get another 5 or 6 years, squeeze another 5 or 6 years out of my life, that would be worth so much more than the first 20 years. And this is the way he was thinking. Wealthy people think about health in terms of making money, being healthy, more productivity, fewer sick days. It's all related.
You can't work if you're obese from junk food and never never exercise. You're not as effective. You know, you do have more sick days. Your productivity, your energy level, your creativity, endorphins and proteins aren't released into your brain. Aerobic exercise does all of those things. And so, this is amazing. I mean, the junk food one just wears me out. 70% of wealthy eat less junk food than 90, or less 300 calories a day of junk food. 97% of poor people. I heard one of the talk radio hosts said America is the first country to have overweight poor people.
Yeah, Dave, you know, I thought that statistic, when I looked at it, I said, there's got to be something wrong with this. It just doesn't make any sense. And then I heard Mayor Bloomberg 2 years ago battling to get the sugar soft drinks down from 32 ounces to 16 ounces. And then someone down the road, he about a year and a half later, because they had a lawsuit, he actually said, well, you know, the one of the reasons is because New York City has the highest percentage of poor people on, you know, that are receiving food stamps. And it's costing us a lot of money because they're all overweight and unhealthy. So I want to get these soft drinks down in size. I want to stop this disaster, this train wreck, and it's hurting New York financially. I said, oh, my gosh, that absolutely makes sense to me. My data now makes sense. I'm not the only one that's seeing this.
Mm. I've always joked and said the average millionaire can't tell you who got thrown off the island. And then I found your statistics. 6% of the wealthy watch reality TV. 78% of the poor watch reality TV.
Yeah, that is, one of the wealthy individuals said, why would I want to waste my time watching somebody else's life when my life is so much more interesting?
Yeah, and in many cases, their life is a train wreck, and that's why they're on television.
That's right. Everybody likes tragedy and drama, and, you know, the thing is, I talk about this a lot, people point out to me, well, you know, a lot of wealthy people are unscrupulous, they're greedy, and they're, what I tell them is, yeah, you only see the wealthy people that are on TV that are the train wrecks, but there's, for every one of them, there's 1,000 others who are good, honest, hardworking individuals that contribute to their community, and they're not in the newspapers because they're not train wrecks. They're good, solid people. They're just not interesting to the media.
Well, because they're not a train wreck, you know. The media has become, you know, it's half our news channels are more like the National Enquirer than they are news. So, and that's the problem. You know, the sad one for me is, and I've noticed this increasingly since the Operation Wall Street debacle, that there's a sadness among a group of people that believes that they've lost their hope. They don't believe if they engage in positive habits, positive things are going to happen. And your stuff bore that out. I mean, 84% of wealthy people believe good habits create opportunity, type luck. And 4% of the poor believe that good habits create opportunity. That's a loss of hope, isn't it?
It is. And to me, it's I believe that we still have an American dream. It's just that we've lost the American dreamer, and it's a sad thing. People are down and out. It seems like there's more of a shift towards an entitlement mindset. People are looking for help from the government, and wealthy people, they kind of have a completely different perspective on that. They believe that they're the only ones that are going to make their lives better. Nobody else is, and they... And this is why the American dream is so important, and it can't be redefined, which I believe they're trying to do. They're trying to redefine it from unlimited opportunity to unlimited entitlement. That's a bad thing for America.
I agree with you. Tom Corley is our guest this hour. The book is Rich Habits, The Daily Success Habits of Wealthy Individuals. You can get it at his website at richhabits.net. If you're a Dave Ramsey listener, they'll give you a discount right now. And there's a promo code there. Put Rich Habits in the promo code box, and you'll get there. Tom, thank you so much for taking your time.
Thanks, Dave, for having me on. I really appreciate it.
It was an honor to have you, sir. And wonderful, wonderful conclusions and thesis. We'll post these 21 statistics on our website soon, and I'll let you know about that on Twitter.